Welcome to the CFO Show. I'm your host, Melissa Howitson, CFO of Vena Solutions. Automations and internal controls can sometimes sound more ominous than what is really just good business practices and checks and balances. Shruti Lanka, CFO of Public.com, is here today to share some of her tactics for automations and internal controls and how to be strategic while tempering risk. Welcome, Shruti. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
So let's start a bit with learning a little bit more about your career, your work experience, as well as your education. You've had quite an interesting road to your current position as CFO at Public.com.
Yeah, I would say it's an unconventional path. And candidly, I don't know if you asked me, 15 years ago, if I thought I would be CFO, I would say that that was the case. But I started out an engineer. I went to school in India, one of the top engineering schools there, and joined Goldman Sachs straight out of school. I come from family, actually, of engineers. So the engineering path was kind of to be expected. But I wanted to try something new. And so decided to set up financial services at Goldman. And when I was at Goldman, honestly, I realized two things. One, that technology can be totally transformational in financial services. It was a company that was early to invest in it. And two, that, both sets of problems, engineering as well as finance, use kind of systems-based problem solving. So there's just a lot of overlap in the types of skills that are needed across both. And so my time there made me, increasingly interested in the world of finance. I ended up leaving Goldman, getting an MBA at Duke, a great experience, and graduated to work in investment banking. And so I went from, actually implementing the nuts and bolts of the world of finance, covering financial institutions, thinking about companies from a 10,000 foot view, thinking about strategic alternatives, raising capital, working alongside management teams to get some of the biggest transactions in the lives of those companies done. It was a really fun experience, but I realized that I wanted to go back to building, and it's more fun, honestly, to create value from ground up versus advising. I think it varies for each one, but this is what I found. And so I ended up exploring the world of startups where I could marry both. And so here in my role at SCFO Public, I oversee both finance and data. So not only do we think about the 10,000 foot view of the company, like where is it going? What are our strategic alternatives? How do we raise capital? But also, how do we build this company from ground up, make sure we have the right tools and instrumentation to make the right decisions for the firm, and work closely with our counterparts in engineering to actually achieve those goals, right? So I think the biggest thing that my engineering background brings to this role in finance is, one, being completely kind of unafraid of the world of engineering. I know it. And two is using systems-based thinking to achieve outcomes that are actually positive from a financial perspective as well.
And that's led you to your role today, where you are with Public.com. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you do at that company?
So Public is a multi-asset investing platform. You can invest in stocks, ETFs, but also bonds, crypto alternative assets, as well as high-yield cash accounts, all on one platform. What we're doing, we're the first mobile-first platform to do it, is to bring together a wide variety of assets, all through one consistent interface with best-in-class data as well as market analysis tools. One fun example is that we have a ChatGPT-based AI assistant within the app that serves to answer your questions about the markets and how they're moving. And what's amazing about sitting in this role as Chief Financial Officer of Public is that not only do I see how data and financial decisions impact the company, but also the lives of our customers, right? So I'm a daily user of Public, and many of the principles that I use on the platform are similar to the principles that I use on the job. So here in public, I oversee, like I said, finance and data. I believe strongly in teams that have skills that encompass much more than just their day jobs. For example, our accountants are data literate. Our FP&A team is very well versed in accounting in addition to being data literate, right? I think that the finance teams of today and tomorrow make decisions in real time using data versus relying on, you know, weekly or monthly or essentially what are data reports. And that's the power of the finance team that we built in public.
Excellent. Sounds like an environment that would have lots of regulation and requirements to make sure that you've got sound controls, which I'm looking forward to digging in just a little bit on that. Just one other question about your background. I noticed you also have founded the F Suite. It sounds like you do that in your spare time. Can you tell us a bit about that and what led you to find that company?
Yeah. Through my career, a number of people looked out for me. And you gave me advice at the most unexpected moments. I found mentorship and sponsorship when I was looking for it least. F-Suite is my way of paying it back. It's really a peer community of CFOs. As you know, at this seed, Melissa, things are changing all the time. The environment is changing all the time. We're in such an interesting moment where, you know, macroeconomic effects are like fully combined with the economic progress that we see. So as a CFO, it's honestly really important to have a group of people that you trust in their decision-making and trust in their approach to problem-solving to lean on when you're encountering problems in your day-to-day business. And F-Suite is my way not only of giving input, but also seeking that input. It generally consists of events around the country. It consists of, you know, real-time feedback when things change. For example, when the banking crisis happened in the U.S., a number of CFOs immediately got on the phone to talk about how they were mitigating it, issues that they were anticipating, et cetera. And I think this is not only a great way for each of us to stay current in our knowledge, but also a way to ensure that there's a pipeline of strong CFOs coming up, right? How do you learn if you're doing it for the first time? Usually from people who've done it before, right? And so F-Suite allows me to give back in that way.
Well, I love that, you know, that importance of mentorship and helping to share our experiences, mentor others. Even this podcast, why we do the podcast is partially to help share experiences. We want to help, you know, make it easier. So many people have had such great, interesting experiences. And when we can all learn from one another, it just makes the greater good better. So that's a great, and congratulations for being a founding member of that organization as well. Now, we talked a little bit about your engineering and your accounting background, and you touched a bit on how those complement each other. Can you give us maybe some more examples about how your engineer background comes into your role as CFO and your finance team, and maybe makes you take a different approach to others?
Yeah, I'm happy, you know, to get a little bit more specific. I think it affects each of the functions on my team in a different way. You mentioned this. Public is an investment platform, right? We are a Series D startup. This means that we move extremely quickly. We've launched 3 products over the last month, but also we do it in an extremely regulated environment, right? We have a public broker-dealer as part of the company, which is on a public company filing timeline. This means that we have to have a level of controls that resemble more a public company than really any other startup, for example, a software startup our status, right? So the key question is, how do you stay on top of the business, ensure you're compliant at every moment, but also make sure that you're staying lean, you can move fast, you're not slowing the business down, right? And to me, there's really 2 sets of answers to that. One is investing deeply in automation, using the power of the data infrastructure that I mentioned before. So making sure that all of our reconciliations are actually just real time, so we don't have to do too much additional work if we have to generate a month-end reconciliation report, right? And the second is to just generate good habits, but also get in the practice of documenting them, right? What do I mean by that? I mean, every finance team reviews their, you know, monthly financial statements with their CFO, probably their CEO, probably other stakeholders around the table. There's probably a meeting in which you're talking about how the company did, what you were expecting it to do. And at the end of the meeting, there are some takeaways. Some people go away and work on these things. Usually in most companies, in most startups, this meeting happens, but there's really no record of it beyond that, right? In order to have a strong, in order to have controls around the FP&A process, in order to have controls around the monthly financials process, all you need is a documentation of this meeting plus written approvals of the actual financials that were being produced, right? So this is what I mean by developed good habits, which means you need to do your monthly review meeting, but also just write it down, right? Just send an email after the meeting so that everyone that needs to approve has approved it. And suddenly you have a control that's super useful in your audit, right? It really doesn't add additional work and it only results in better business discipline. So I think that you can combine both to ensure that you stay nimble, like I said, but also are not, are staying compliant in a rapidly evolving regulatory environment.
Can definitely see the engineering thinking coming together with the financial piece and how they're a great complement. And you're touching on something really important there, because often I think that when it comes to thinking about internal controls, that feels like a daunting task or something that one individual in accounting needs to own, and it's a checkbox and they're going to put it on a shelf. But really, when I think about internal controls, and similar to what you were just mentioning, it really comes down to sound operational practices, things that make sense for the business that also help you live in a more controlled environment and make sure that you're protecting the business and actually enabling the business in some cases to move a bit quicker. Can you maybe give us a couple more examples of how you think about internal controls and how you breathe life into them in your organization?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an excellent way to put it, Melissa. I think the simplest way is, what do you need to do to feel comfortable that one, I'd pick a financial control, the numbers that you're looking at in front of you are correct? And what do you need to feel comfortable to ensure that they remain correct, right? And so one simple thing that we do is, you just on revenue reconciliation, right? We rely on some external, we rely on our clearing partner to clear and execute trades. They are the source of truth on trade information, and ultimately they're the owners of this data. Now, we could just rely on the data that they generate and say, okay, this is our revenue, our clearing partner says so, right? But for me to believe in the number that I'm looking at, I need to make sure that it ties to the systems that we have, which I trust, the systems that we built, right? So one of our controls built within our data warehouse is to double check the information that comes in from our clearing partner versus our own, revenue calculations based on the numbers that we have internally, right? And guess what? This is an extremely useful cross-check as we go into audit season and as we, speak to our Big Four auditor. They really like that we are verifying this revenue number, not only on an aggregate basis, but really on a transaction level and user level. And it really stemmed from me needing to feel comfort around this number. But then you add on the layer of, okay, let's document the control, just write it, right? Write it down. We've checked these two things. The dashboard matches the number that we received externally And there you have it. Without adding an additional system, you now have a control that is audit ready, right?
And you touched on there some, it sounds like some automations that you might have built into the system. And so tell me about how you think about automations and how they relate to controls.
Yeah. So there's a couple of different, there are some automations that live completely outside of our kind of engineering and technology infrastructure, which I'll come to in a little bit. But as we think about our internal infrastructure, right, I believe that every company has to have a solid data warehouse and data infrastructure that ties together every piece of business information internally. Now, at Public, that happens to live close to the finance team. In many places, it lives outside of finance. It doesn't matter, right? At the end of the day, finance is an extremely key stakeholder in this unified data warehouse. And one of the first things that I wanted to see when I walked into this job was ensuring that it captured every piece of information from the start of a user journey to the end, right? The advantage of having this unified view of data across the company as well as user behavior is that it is easy to add on the revenue implications as well as financial implications of each of those pieces if everything lives in the same place. So in this specific instance, I just gave the example of reconciling revenues against our clearing partner. Because we have every single piece of trade information that our users are engaging in, and the status of execution, whether it's gone to a clearing broker, whether it came back as successful, it's really easy to translate that into a successful set of trades and then layer on our pricing, et cetera, that is necessary in order to come up with a financial view. But the core of that really is this unified data warehouse, which pulls together information from all of our systems, right? So I think actually the automation begins there, which is have the uniform view. And then the level two of that is add on the financial implications for each of those actions in order to then generate real time, not, you know, monthly or quarterly, but real time reporting on financial performance, which not only aids you in controls and closing the books every month, but also in a day-to-day view on operational performance, right? Are you meeting your targets? You don't need to wait for the FP&A meeting to know whether you're going to end up ahead or behind on revenue and gross profit and other key metrics at the end of the month.
So you touched on some really good concepts there. And one of the ones, as I'm thinking about those automations as well, I think sometimes, you know, what you are describing could sound complex and daunting, but I don't think that it has to be. But what does a team do if they feel a little bit strapped for resources in terms of how to think about moving forward with automations and controls?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, Liz. Honestly, I think the key thing as CFO is to, one, make it a priority, and two, choose a trade-off, right? So I'll give you an example. About halfway through last year, we had lost a person. We were suddenly more lean than we anticipated going into audit season, et cetera. You would think that we would, you know, be all hands on deck, you know, get the job done whichever way you can. Instead, we actually deprioritized some, you know, some projects that I felt could wait, and made the priority automation for the quarter for the entire team, which may be counterintuitive, but the reality is any investment you make in automation is likely to save you time and effort down the line. And any automated control is likely to be more accurate than a manual one, right? So setting aside a quarter, especially going into a crunch time, turned out to be invaluable because we were able to find a couple of, you know, efficiencies that we wouldn't have found if that was not made the team's priority. One of them was finding a really low-cost contractor to help import some bank reconciliations. I basically standardized the format. It costed us almost nothing, maybe a few thousand dollars, to now bring data in a uniform manner. And the second was to enable the team to use, you know, whatever resources they could in order to put these automations in place. So we had one member of the team raise her hand, use ChatGPT to come up with this macro, which runs only on local machines. So it wasn't running in the cloud. It wasn't unsafe. It was not sending data outside of the organization. That helped her then use the data that we had imported to come up with some very complex reconciliations in the matter of seconds. And this wouldn't have happened if we did not actually create the time in order to work on it.
How long did it last? And how much time did employees put towards this? I'm assuming they were still doing their day jobs in the process. So how did you structure this so that it didn't turn into a 1 or 2 year project?
Yeah. I mean, I think I have the flexibility of, you know, one, having a very ambitious young team. So the moment you mention automation to people who really are interested in learning more and furthering their skills, they were willing to make the time for it. The second I would say is we looked at a whole list of priorities and moved a couple of them to the following quarter. So actually this emphasis on automation really within the accounting team really only lasted about a quarter. And people went above and beyond because the work was so interesting to them, right? And it's also true, honestly, that if you're working, you know, in most accounting teams, your scope for continuous learning reduces over time, right? Are you picking up new skills every day? Probably not. And it also allowed me to create an opportunity for the team to do so, right? Pick up skills that they didn't have before. So really, it was only a quarter. I have to say that it was built on the foundation of a pretty strong kind of data-driven framework that we talked about a little bit before. That helped too. But also it was consciously pushing out projects that I thought could wait and encouraging people around future time saved and skills that they could build.
It sounds like, reminds me of a Kaizen blitz in automotive where it's, you know, here's a thing, we're going to go do it in a limited window and see what we can accomplish. So I'm sure coming at this other side of that, that must have felt really rewarding for your team.
I think actually making it time limited was probably, I didn't think of this before, but I think that it was probably more helpful than not to actually get it done. Because just as you said, anything that turns into a two-year project probably turns into four and doesn't get done, right? And so giving it a limited amount of time so that we could work on it efficiently and really focus on quick wins was probably an advantage too.
Absolutely. And you touched on ChatGPT, and I know AI is obviously a topic top of mind for lots of folks in finance. What are your thoughts when you think about AI and internal controls? Can they exist together, or are there risks?
Yeah, it's an excellent question and one that we honestly grapple with, not just within the team, right, within the finance and accounting team, but as we think about applications of broader financial services, ensuring we do it in a compliant way, consistent with our regulatory framework, et cetera, as we offer it to our customers, right? And honestly, it comes down to a very simple decision point, which is as long as you're not sharing customer data or company data into the cloud or into these external parties, and as long as you're operating simply on using the framework of your data sets, you are generally compliant within any regulatory framework. Right. And we've worked, you know, closely with our regulators, FINRA, et cetera, to ensure that they're comfortable with our approach from a customer perspective. And we use this a similar principle as we think about our company data. And so in the specific example that I gave you, we want my team member wanted to automate a specific accounting bank reconciliation, right? Anyone who's deep at reconciliation land, and especially if you have multiple bank accounts the way we do, I think you know that it can be an extremely painful task because there are so many banks in this country. They have various levels of automation. They have completely different reports. And to make them consistent and ensure that the numbers all tie out can be a very daunting task for many accounting teams. So the problem she landed into was, you know, having all these different data sets. And as I alluded to before, we were able to find a vendor who was easily able to bring together these various data sets in a somewhat consistent fashion. So step one was to make the framework of the data set consistent. Now, once that was done, what she did, which was very innovative, was to feed in the framework with dummy data of this back reconciliation into ChatGPT and work iteratively to write a macro that would automate the reconciliation she wanted to see. So it did not actually share any company data with ChatGPT, and it resulted in a piece of code that could be executed only locally and could not be, you know, accessed on the internet, was not running on the internet. So I think the, you know, key principle coming out of this is work closely with your compliance team, if you have one, or your finance team, to ensure that you're not sharing data back into the cloud and you're not putting the company at risk by running, you know, code on an isolated server. There, you know, you'll have company experts who can help you decide whether that is the case. And as long as you're using generally the framework of your data set without actually sharing data and running code locally, you're safe to come up with really, you know, any kind of automation to make your job easier, right? And so we still use this macro and you know, it works beautifully.
That's excellent. Glad to hear that it worked out so well. And with some of these automations, you've talked about so many different examples of things you've done that have created automations, ended up with a better work product, probably less rework. How do you identify the key areas where you're going to focus on those automations?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And honestly, an evolving one, right? I wish there's really no like a magic bullet around this. It is honestly to look at the areas that take the most amount of time, right? So as part of the same automation goal, and I'd say we didn't quite, get to this target, but we came close. The goal that we set was to have zero manual journal entries. Now, you know, and anyone in a finance team knows that's honestly probably an impossible task, but you want to get as close as you can. And it's an ambitious enough goal that it brings a team together, right? So as we thought about that, it then resulted in a list of things that, you know, take the most amount of time, and we attack the ones which take the most amount of time first, right? I will add that it is not also achieved in isolation, right? Many of the other automations that we've built outside of the bank reconciliation ChatGPT example I gave you rely heavily, like I said, on our data infrastructure, rely heavily on partnership with our engineering team. And if as long as the goal is clear, which is to get to an accurate answer each time and do it in the fastest way possible, working cross-functionally to achieve that goal is usually possible.
And I love how you set a vision for that to then get people rallying around and knowing which are the... I think that helps create that filter through which to determine, okay, where are most of these journal entries happening? Where would we get the biggest bang for the buck by automating? Because this is the goal we're after at the end game. So really, really smart leadership there. So when I think then, and you touched on some of the reliance on other teams for the automations. So as you're setting out that path to simplify, did you also get time allocated from some of those other teams so that they could be supporting your team and making sure that, you know, the seasonality of workloads sometimes doesn't match up. So you had, I'm assuming, pre-planned to have those resources available to you during that window?
Yeah, I think we're fortunate that, one, we invested in self-service data infrastructure, right? And I know it probably seems like I'm talking about it a lot, but it is because it is such a cornerstone of our approach, right? We invested early in self-service data infrastructure. So what this means is there are specific people on our accounting team who are extremely data literate and can produce most of the reports they need on their own through our data warehouse, right? So what this then does is that it doesn't require too much additional time. So they take something like 70% of the way, and then they turn to their counterparts, whether it's in data or engineering, and say, hey, can you just help me get this across the finish line? That's a much easier answer than a huge vague question that someone in, you know, data or engineering doesn't understand at all. They have no idea what revenue recognition means. And they don't even know where to begin, right? So then it requires a very kind of deep conversation on resourcing, and we don't really have the time. And, you know, it becomes a very different negotiation from we think we're almost there. And the advantage of doing it once is that I will not ask you again, right? And so I think that in an environment which is already data-driven, the conversation is simpler. But if you don't have that, and I didn't have it in prior roles, I would say it is extremely important to draw the picture of why, right? Take people along. Again, it usually comes down to strong business fundamentals. It's not, you know, it's really not about getting the audit completed or, you know, just having financial reports. It really is about getting an accurate understanding of business performance. And so kind of laying out the problem statement in terms of things that matter to more than just finance is an extremely important part of getting other parts around the company along the journey.
What a great piece of advice that is, because I think sometimes we forget to do that and then we wonder why we don't have that support or buy-in that we were hoping for.
And I think it also is, it helps for finance teams to know that their work is more impactful than just producing the report, right? Because we make investment decisions based on the numbers that come out. We make decisions on, you know, what products we're likely to put marketing weight behind. And so it's also up to leadership to provide that context on every team member's work.
Absolutely. Now, when it comes to automations and controls, in your experience, what are some of the areas where you think that people make mistakes along the way?
I think it's, you know, I'll answer it two ways. One is waiting until some, you know, big outcome, like we're going to wait till we go public before we have controls in place. That's generally a bad idea because, you know, you probably need it along the way. Again, for the reasons that we talked about, which is for general business sense, make sure that your numbers tie, make sure that, you know, your revenues are representative. So I'd say, honestly, the one biggest one I've seen is people just wait too long. The words like controls and, you know, risk management scare a lot of CFOs or feel like they're not priorities, maybe earlier in the days of business. I would argue that that is not the case. And in many situations, having, you know, some smarter checks and balances improves the quality of the business. The second I would say is not really understanding, you know, what it really means. And we talked a little bit about this, but in most cases, really just, you know, controls or risk management come down to just good habits and then writing it down. I know it sounds really basic, but if you can, you know, focus on the core of it, most places are almost nearly there uncontrolled. Like you're, no CTO is waiting for the CFO to say, hey, what about cybersecurity risks, right? I mean, they're thinking about it all the time. But then we should like write down, no CTO waits for the CFO to say, what about cybersecurity risks, right? They think about it all the time. I mean, any attack on the systems keeps a CTO up at night. So all I encourage, you know, CFOs to do in partnership with their CTOs is to just write down the things they're doing to prevent, you know, cybersecurity attacks, right? So I think it comes down to more basic things. So don't wait too long to think about a control environment.
Now I have one more question for you, and I want to switch gears just a little bit. Because something else that you do is that you've been really passionate about promoting leadership for women. Is there a passion project that you're currently working on that's going to help advance women in their careers?
I think that, to one, I would say I'm extremely passionate about, you know, bringing women up, not just in finance, but also in engineering. I feel really fortunate to work at a great place where if I look out at the floor right now, I'm in the office, a full half of the population here is women and across all functions, not just, you know, functions that typically have women. And so I think part of it is just hiring more women. So, you know, women like you and me should hire more women. But one of the things I'm working on is honestly just writing down some of the basics around everything that we talked about a little bit more, and documenting it more formally so that it reduces the it reduces the barrier to entry to fields like this. Because you and I both know that startups are unique beasts. They're very different from larger companies. So demystifying startup finance is one of the things I'm working on.
Excellent. I don't know how you find the time, but definitely appreciate all that you're doing. Thank you so much for joining me today for this discussion. Now, whenever we have guests on the show, we do have two rapid fire questions at the end that we like to ask. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Bring it on.
First one, what is the best piece of business or leadership advice that you've received?
Oh yeah, the best one I would have to say is hire someone that scares you. Everyone on my team, I think, is smarter than me. I think that's a great thing. And so hire someone that scares you is the best piece of advice I've ever received.
Excellent. Good advice. And the next one, is there a book, be it business or personal, that has had a great impact on you?
I think there's a multiple across kind of business and personal. Tony Fadell's recent book on building, you know, not just within startups, but within larger companies is one that actually left a huge impression on me. Not just because he talks about, building Nest, which is one of his big successes, but also building, you know, within Apple, within various places. He worked on the original iPhone. And it actually focuses on some of the pieces of working across companies, working with partners, things that many other 0-to-1 books don't really talk about. So I recommend you check it out.
Excellent. We'll definitely have to do that. Again, thank you so much for your time today and really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
If you'd like to learn more about today's topic, please visit the links in the show notes. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a review on one of the streaming platforms. We love to hear from you and it helps listeners to find the show. And remember to subscribe wherever you listen to or watch your podcasts. You don't want to miss an episode. For the CFO Show, I'm Melissa Howitson. Until next time.